Hi, everybody. Want you to know we post this show every day, and guess what? We hold no punches, so look for it. Truth bomb number one. Tesla goes big on India to the tune of billions of dollars. Truth bomb number two. China says to Tesla, big mistake. Truth bomb number three. The Modi government must now juggle economic growth, a lot of it, and its own geopolitical neutrality. Can it do that? I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Direct Impact. So I want to talk to you today about India. India is an enormous economic story. I mean, just really impressive. I mean, I know that some people think, look, there are also some issues down the line with India's economic growth, and the country has a north side and a south side where one is generally much more advanced, very different than the other, more economically viable than the other. Regardless of all of that, taken as a whole, it's almost impossible to look at what's happening in India and not come out with a one-word conclusion that contains just three letters. Wow. Wow. I mean, according to recent projections, if everything that we're reading is correct, India is on track to surpass Japan and Germany, position itself as the world's third largest economy by 2027. That's according to the investment banking firm Jefferies, who I have been following, by the way, personally for years, and which I can say without hesitancy that they are usually spot on. You know why, by the way, this is such an impressive story? So 10 years ago, think about this, India ranked as the ninth largest economy in the world. Now it's fifth, heading to number three, with a nominal GDP of $3.4 trillion. And here's where this story gets even more crazy. According to Jefferies' forecasts, India's GDP will hit $5 trillion within the next 4 years. And by 2030, are you ready? $10 trillion. India will hit $10 trillion. That's a lot. I mean, think about this. If you put your money in India today, you will likely see returns of more than 10% over the next 5 to 7 years. And that's a conservative estimate, according to most of the experts who are looking at it. Might not be a bad place to put your money. So while the rest of the world is talking about China, 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 India is right there with it, almost neck and neck. Yet, look, it's still expected that China will surpass the U.S. China will become the number one economy in the world by 2027. We have spoken about this before, you and I. That means the U.S. will fall to number two. India will rise to number three. But take a look at this chart. I found this fascinating. Comparing India and China from a real GDP point of view, GDP growth, that is, and you might be surprised to find out that there, India is actually ahead of China. See the blue line? India is actually ahead of China. Beginning around 2022, India has pulled ahead. Of course, China still has the upper hand on tech and manufacturing. But wait, wait, wait. Something has just happened that could alter that course.
Electric car giant Tesla is cranking up for a mega entry into India. Senior officials from the company will soon be meeting Commerce and Industry Minister Piyush Goyal to reportedly finalize the contours of the investment and operations.
So there you have it. I mean, in what some see as a shot across the bow at China, Elon Musk has arrived in India ready to deal, and deal he has, to the tune of $2 to $3 billion into the Indian economy. Tesla's reportedly signed a deal with India's Tata Electronics to procure semiconductor chips for its global operations. Tata, or Tata as some pronounce it, is one of India's largest conglomerates. So why is this so important, right? And what's it got to do with China? Remember when I told you, Was this a week ago? I think it was a week ago when we were having this conversation, and I told you about Janet Yellen. Janet Yellen went to China, and these are my words, but I thought she was, like, lecturing the Chinese government. Here it is.
We intend to underscore the need for a shift in policy by China during these talks, building on the over 2 hours I spent on this topic with the Vice Premier last week. This is part of our effort to advocate for American industries and prevent the significant economic disruptions we've seen in the past.
So, what is she talking about? Well, one of the things that Yellen and ostensibly the United States market was concerned about when she made that visit was China muscling in on the electric car industry. Pretty simple, right? China feels that it can. In fact, it already has begun designing and producing EVs that are, some would argue, more efficient, less expensive, and therefore more marketable than those made in America and elsewhere. And they are producing them for their own brands, apparently, not for somebody else's brand like Tesla, yeah, et cetera. Now, in steps India, and China has plenty to say about that. Take a look at this headline. I found this and thought you'd want to look at this. It says, China is seething. In other words, they're not happy about Tesla's India debut. According to China, Musk is making a huge mistake aligning himself and his company with India's tech manufacturing base, which is, and here's how China explains it. These are their words. This is what they say about India, why they think Tesla's making a big mistake and Elon Musk is making a big mistake. They say that India is immature and unprepared. Interesting choice of word, isn't it? Immature and unprepared. Is it? One thing is for sure, like it or not, the Indian economy is attracting a lot of attention these days. Look at this announcement. This was made just within the past 48 hours. BlackRock, arguably the most powerful banking and investment firm in the world with extremely close ties to Washington, has just announced a joint merger with India's Jio Financial Services Company. Why? Well, BlackRock seems to be banking on India's wealth management and asset management capabilities to boot. Didn't know they had that. Big. So think about this. Think about where India is right now. Investment firms, tech, manufacturing. Take those growing sectors, add it to India's already powerful services sector, and what you have is a juggernaut economy for the future. I do see a caveat, though. One, potential caveat. And that is how well India can juggle its geopolitical ties with places like Washington. I mean, BlackRock is might as well be the White House. But they also have to juggle their ties with Moscow, with Beijing. So does it risk co-opting, or better yet, being co-opted by Western economies in an effort to compete? Or, and this is what I think they have been doing successfully, I would argue, we'll see what my guest says, or does it maintain its neutrality as a partner within the Global South community with other BRICS countries like China and Russia and Brazil and Iran and South Africa and a few others? Joining us now to talk about this is KJ No. He's a writer, a journalist, and an educator specializing in the geopolitics and the economics of that whole region right there. Asia Pacific, which includes a lot of other countries that we didn't mention, but this whole thing between India and China, I find fascinating. I don't know if you agree the way I position my enthymeme at the very end. I think Mr. Modi has to probably continue to do what he's done, which is he seems like the neutral guy. He seems like the best-looking guy or the best-looking gal on campus. Everybody wants to date her. Everybody wants to know her. Everybody wants to invest with her. And he doesn't want to come out and say, oh, I'm choosing you. He seems to be choosing everybody. I think he almost needs to keep that track. And this thing with Blackwater concerns me a little bit. What do you say?
I think that framing is really accurate. I think Modi has a real balancing act before him. He has to balance between China, which is an important neighbor and economy with which it trades. Mm-hmm. It has to balance with Russia, who has been a traditional ally. And it also has to balance with the United States, which for at least a decade, 15 years, has been trying to pull it into a coalition called the Quad in order to wage war and contain China. So that's a very difficult challenge. Right now, what we see is there is a movement for the U.S. to really try and pull India into its geopolitical orbit, primarily as part of its defense industrial supply chain. That is a very deliberate and very intentional project that the U.S. has, including the manufacture of, for example, advanced jet engines inside of India.
Well, they as long as create... but KJ, I'm thinking that's a fascinating thing that you just said, and I want to jump on it because I was thinking as you were saying it, as long as the U.S. can do that without making India or suckering India, maybe a better way to put it, into having to choose, it's either us or them, correct?
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is the problem. The U.S. Has this idea that that India has to choose. India cannot be a party to both. It has to choose the U.S. or China or Russia. It has to be part of the U.S. Hegemonic alliance, or it can be part of the BRI, the BRICS, mm-hmm. and the Global South, the multipolar world that is developing. And I'll be honest here, I think that India may be making the wrong choice. And I'll, you know, point out a few data points here. The first is, although India is growing in leaps and bounds as far as the economy is concerned, all of that growth is growing in an extraordinary disproportionate fashion. What I mean by that is India currently ranks 111th on the Global Hunger Index. It is behind North Korea, Congo, Zimbabwe, and just ahead of Afghanistan and Haiti. So there are fundamental infrastructural and social needs that are not being met. And so you can talk all you want about India having a large population and a large youthful population, large labor force. But if that labor force is stunted and starved and underdeveloped, and is not going to school, then you have nothing to actually compete against in the global economy.
Are you saying that is so because Modi needs to come up with a better and more mixed economy, and that he may be going too far into what, at least in this country, we would call a type almost of crony capitalism that doesn't serve the people of the country?
I think so. I think there's a lot of, you know, tight relations that are being built around, you know, certain elites. And also, it is very, very much a neoliberal approach to development. The thing which is really important, and I think you put your finger on it, you ask the question whether India can develop simply by being co-opted into the U.S. economic system. Yeah. And I think the historical record shows that you cannot develop if you set yourself up as a tenant farmer on the U.S. plantation. You just can't get out of that treadmill.
What an interesting choice of words. I want to ask you then about this comment by China. It almost looks like China's a little perturbed. Well, it doesn't look like it. They probably are perturbed. I mean, first they get a lecture from Janet Yellen, of all people. It's almost like grandma came over to pull your ear like she did when we were in Catholic school. And then they hear this, that suddenly Elon Musk is going to India to do a deal with them, and he's going to make EVs, electric cars, there instead of anywhere else. And China says, and you heard, I read the quote, I think they said that they're immature and unprepared. What do you make of that comment, saying that, look, China's saying our economy is mature and prepared and theirs is not? Are they right?
You know, I think there may be some truth to that. You know, once again, some data points. China has 16 of the 20 top EV manufacturers. Another data point, China has about 6.8 million EV chargers. I think that the United States has about 150,000, 180,000 EV chargers. So we're talking factors of difference. How many EV chargers does India have? It has about 12,000. That's according to the government. And that is probably an overestimate. I've seen, numbers as low as. But why
would that matter? Tesla doesn't want to sell cars in India. I mean, I'm sure he does. Let me restate that. Tesla wants India as a manufacturing base where he can make cars and then get them the hell out of there and sell them in the United States and all over the world because he thinks he can do it there cheaper, not necessarily because he wants to sell cars to India, I think. Am I wrong?
I think the initial idea is to start to sell some Teslas in India, certainly to the wealthy. And these cars will actually be produced in Shanghai and then sold in India, and they'll be exempt from the, you know, the taxes that are usually levied, the duties. So that's an interesting, that's his edge in. But it is true, they do want to see if they can build out some real industrial manufacturing capacity in India, especially in defense supply and also in general industrial capacity, including EVs. Here's an example with China. Xiaomi is the latest Chinese EV maker that has come online. It's originally made cheap, phones. And now, within 3 years, it has created an EV, which apparently checks all the boxes, apparently is almost flawless. It did that in 3 years, which is like going to a golf course for the first time and getting a hole in one. It's incredible. And their factory produces a new electric car every 76 seconds. Without being touched by human hands. It's all automated. It's all robotic. Yeah. And so that, you can see, is an example of the maturity, if you will, as opposed to India, where, you know, a lot of the work is still manufacture. It's, you know, artisanal manufacture. Nothing against artisanal manufacture. It's extraordinary. But India has strengths in textiles, leathers, pharmaceuticals. And it also has service industries and IT service industries, but it doesn't have that incredible logistical infrastructure and automotive industrial capacity that China has.
So it sounds like the way you're drawing this picture, it's a pretty steep hill to climb for India, based on the example that has been set by China. Let's leave that there. I'm going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to be able to talk to you about just exactly how big the economy of India is and may get still. And is everything that Jefferies and others are predicting going to come true? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Known in Vietnam as the American War, the Vietnam War lasted for almost two decades and dragged in numerous countries.
Nhưng mà người cầm đầu của Mỹ nói rằng sang Việt Nam là như thế giúp Việt Nam. Và thì còn anh em thì không thống kê được.
Hundreds of thousands of American troops were sent to the country to back the South Vietnamese army.
Máy bay rồi nó xả.
American soldiers murdered resistors mercilessly, burned down entire villages, and spread dangerous chemicals.
Cần nghĩ lại những người Mỹ, những người lính Mỹ rất trẻ và họ nhận thức không.
Did the Americans ever fully acknowledge what they did, and are the Vietnamese veterans ready to forgive?
Cảm nhận là gia đình chúng tôi bắt mất. Trong chiến tranh mà cả quê hương đất nước cũng bị mắc mỡ trong cái sự đau thương của gia mình.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and I'm talking to KJ Noh. We're talking about the rise of India, the competition it's getting from China, which has not a new story. Some of the developments that have happened this week with huge announcements both by Tesla and BlackRock. And then there's this. When I read these figures over the last couple of days and saw that $10 trillion figure for the potential GDP in the next 7 to 10 years by India, my jaw dropped. I thought, wow. But yet, if the present trends continue, and at least when I look at this, I think of Indians as a whole, hardworking, industrious, culturally driven to succeed, educated, already on track for this juggernaut economy that we see. And maybe the most important thing of all is English speaking. I think based on some of those things, they may have the in on being able to achieve some of these massive predictions that we're hearing about them. You say what?
I say that's only predicated on the assumption that the English-speaking countries are going to continue to develop and need the services of India. If that's not the case, then it's probably better to learn Russian or Chinese. And so I don't think that is a given. Currently, it's a real advantage in terms of IT service sector and also call centers, etc. But this is relatively low-hanging fruit. What you really need to do in order to build a wealthy society is you need to do literacy and education. You need smart, educated people to build a wealthy society. You have to develop all human capacities because you need all hands on deck, men and women. And I think that's one of the areas where India is still behind. It has 76% literacy and much lower for women. China, for example, has 99.9% literacy. And so these are really important things. The other thing is, and once again, I want to highlight infrastructure. Mm-hmm. China has extraordinary infrastructure, logistical infrastructure, ports, roads, rail, etc. A few years ago, I went on a trip to India and I took a bus and it was about a 90-minute bus ride. And I was wearing a smartwatch, which counts, you know, your steps. And when I got off the bus, my smartwatch said that I had taken 13,000 steps. Why? Because my butt was getting whacked 13,000 times on the road.
So, yeah. Well, at least you got credit for it.
I got credit for it, yes. But I mean, this is just, one example of how infrastructure really needs to be developed in India. Infrastructure, education, and real human development that brings up the bottom. India has great elite institutions, great universities, but it didn't do what China did, which was educate people at the primary level. You build up the floor, not raise the ceiling.
I wonder though, if it's, while that's obviously attractive internally for a country to have its people educated, and that's probably why we've seen such an incredible rise. I was reading the numbers last night as to employment in China and what average Chinese person used to make 15 years ago compared to what they make now is like this. Whereas in India, it's kind of like this, not exactly like that. I mean, pardon my charts with my hands, but there is a big difference. I would think then that's good and bad. If you're somebody who wants to start manufacturing and you're looking at India, you'd think, well, I could probably get it done cheaper there. I mean, as selfish as that sounds, it might be an advantage for India. What do you think?
Well, I mean, certainly it is a comparative advantage in the global labor arbitrage. I mean, India's labor is about 1/8 the cost of China. China charges eight more tons. But the difference is that China has a more industrially experienced and technologically advanced workforce. And once again, you have access to incredible infrastructure, incredible supply chains that are right there, and incredible automation. As I said, in China, everything is getting automated. Labor is getting automated. When I was in China, last year, all the deliveries in the hotel were done by robot. I mean, it was scary, because you see this robot come to your door, it calls you, it greets you, and then it gives you everything you need. But there's a level of automation which is already built into China because of its incredible 5 and 5.5G development that India still needs to catch up on. And, I wish the government would do the same thing that China did, which is develop human capacities on all levels, bring everybody in, and not just develop a kind of an elite society that raises the wealth of, you know, those who are most connected.
Well, that's interesting because it's a look inside the system, which very few people provide. You've been very critical. I mean, I don't think you're saying there's anything wrong, in essence, with the fact that they are growing and will continue to grow. But you're saying there are some infrastructure issues inside that growth that someone needs to look at. Fact of the matter is, because of how fast they're growing, politically, Modi is in a really good place. People love him there. And I would be shocked to see anybody come out and presume to be able to compete with him at this point. And obviously, we're going to be watching that election as well. KJ No, you are a wonderful guest. What a great conversation. Thanks for being such a smart guy and sharing some of that with us. We appreciate it. So before we go, I want to tell you something that we do here, and that's in conversations like the one I just had with KJ. It's to try and de-silo the world, try and tell both sides of stories, not live in little boxes. Truths don't live in boxes, neither do we. And I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll look for you again right here on Direct Impact.